Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
Football fans, the wait is over. Playoff football is back in action this weekend, and now with Bet365, you can get in on it too. Starting Thursday, Bet365 is offering to double your money with a super boost on one or more passing yards in the Denver versus Buffalo game. That's right, all it takes is one single yard. So even if your team doesn't start strong, you can. Only with Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Select markets only. Minimum, maximum, wager, and fixed boost percentage applies. Super boost for single bets only. T&Cs and restrictions apply.
Welcome to another episode of the Forecast F1 podcast, and we're going to talk about the Grand Prix at Silverstone. And I guess for once, I don't really need to ask anybody who the driver of the day will be, but we'll get to that in a bit. First, Sam, how have you been?
I've been good. It was definitely a weather-stricken weekend, wasn't it? Something that you like to vocally enjoy or have vocally enjoyed in the past. So definitely one where lots of safety cars, lots of situations to talk about actually overall throughout the weekend.
Yeah, you're right. I think actually after the opening weekend this year, this has been only the second time that we've really had rain during one of the races, but very exciting weekend. I think lots to talk about. But first, let me introduce the other guest that we have on this weekend, and I'm very happy to say that Eloise Goldberg is joining us, and she's competing this year in F4 France. Eloise, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, and you?
All good, and we're very happy to have you on. I wanted to ask, we start off and our listeners have a little bit of an idea, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us how you got into racing, and how has your journey been up until this point?
Of course. Well, I started racing as a coincidence, actually, because I don't really come from a racing family. My father does theater and my mother's an archaeologist. And my mother, being an archaeologist, she brought me once to one of her dig sites that was in the desert in China. And my parents had seen that nearby there was this spot where we could do some buggy driving in the dunes. And so they thought that as a family outing, we could go there once and just try it out. And I absolutely loved it. And around that same time, I started watching Formula One with my brother. And the idea of becoming a race car driver sort of came into my mind. But at the time, I thought that it was a bit of an unrealistic dream. So I sort of gave up on it. But it was a decision that I really regretted. So shortly after my 13th birthday, I realized that I should just give it a shot. And even if I don't make it as a race car driver, I'll know that I'll have tried. And so that's when I started doing race car driving.
Okay, well, that's a very cool story. Very unconventional too, I would say. How old are you now, if I can ask?
I'm 16 years old.
All right, and this is your first year, right, in F4 France?
Yeah. Well, I started off in rental karting when I was 13. And there I was spotted by the manager that ran the karting place that I was at. It was called the Karting de Vitebœuf. And he offered to train me and then for me to race in his competition karting team. So that's what I did. But unfortunately, I got a rib injury on my first race. So on my first season, I ended up doing just one race because the injury stopped me from racing for a couple of months. And then towards the end of the year, I had heard about the French Federation's junior karting program, and they had some tryouts in November. And my ribs were starting to heal, so I decided that I would go to Le Mans. I did 1 or 2 days of training, and then I did the selections, and I got in, obviously based on my potential, because at the time, since I didn't have much experience, of course I wasn't the fastest driver in France. And so then I started training, and I did one full season of competition karting, and it was for the French Championship. And I managed to make a lot of progress, do some top tens at the end of the season. So the Federation offered that I do a couple of testing days in F4 at the Bugatti circuit in Le Mans. And then they said that it would be a good idea for me to do a 2-year F4 program with them.
That's very cool.
Okay, that is very cool. And how, because it's a little bit of a different setup than in some of the other F4 championships, I think. So you're not racing in different teams, right? So you're all part of the French Federation of Racing, and you're not like split up into different teams, or how does that work?
So the Federation really looks into equity when it comes to the competition. It was the same thing in karting. The Federation provides the cars for the drivers, so it's exactly the same one for everyone. And then the mechanics are also in learning, and we're assigned 2 mechanics at the beginning of the year, and they stay with us throughout the season. And we have the same set of tires for everyone, same car, same setup, so that it's really focusing on the driver's ability to perform and them being able to learn and to make some progress in the championship.
That's actually really cool. I really like that setup. I mean, and actually, how do you like having to, because if you have a race weekend, you basically have one qualifying session, and you have three races, right?
Well, I like that setup. I'm used to having multiple races per weekend because that's how it was in karting. And I think it's a good program to learn, because for me, my objective is doing one season in Formula 4 to learn how to race in single seater, to handle the car, and then the second year to really go and get some results in the French Championship. And I think that setup is really good because it allows us to gain racing experience, because we get 3 30-minute races, which is a lot of time, but it also allows us to break up the weekend and be able to debrief between races so that we know what we did wrong and we could learn from those things.
What would you say when it comes to being in F4, and even just what I find fascinating is how your interest came to be as like in the sport in general. What would you say was one of the important motivators or things that you utilize for confidence to continue to pursue not only currently in F4, but going throughout the current several years that you've been in the sport?
I think I just love racing. It's as simple as that. I think that I get the opportunity to do what I love full time is just wonderful. And that's what I want to be doing with my life. If I manage to be a pro driver, I would be getting paid to do what I love most. And I think that's wonderful. And it just feels like it was what I was meant to do. And I'm going to give it my best shot, because the first thing that I told myself when I decided to become a race car driver is that maybe I won't make it, but at least I would have tried my best, and that's worth something.
Absolutely. I think that that's an inspirational to say, because there's a lot of people that what's most important is just like you said, is to give it your all, and clearly you're doing that, which is something that's quite incredible.
Thank you.
Yeah, not only that, at the same time, you're also able, like you're saying, you do the things you love most, and you go to a lot of different circuits that are actually really, really great. Because if we're looking a little bit at the calendar of your season, then actually you've already raced at Spa, right? Your last race round was at Spa, but you're also still going to Le Mans. What are the circuits that you like most? Not just this year, but also from karting. What kind of circuits do you like?
Well, so recently I did go to Spa, and I must say that it was wonderful. It was my first time driving on a track where F1 had driven recently, because I also did drive in Dijon that used to be an F1 track. But Spa was really special because in Formula 4, you can pass the Raidillon flat out. And I remember doing it on the sim and not thinking it was that incredible. But when I did it in real life, it was fantastic. It's a feeling I can't describe. Wow. And it's something that everyone that has passed the Raidillon flat out, everyone always talks about it. And I remember when I was getting ready for the race, people would say, you'll see when you pass the Raidillon, it's incredible. And it really was.
That's amazing.
And then there was also, well, obviously the track where I started rental karting, the Karting de Villebeuf. It's special to me because, well, obviously it was my first steps into motor racing, but I'm really close to the people there. And we also had this sort of, I don't know how you say it in English, but it's a sort of dinner you have to support a driver. And it's a track that I really hold dear because it's where I started and it's where I learned, and they still support me and they help me out as much as they can. So I think that they're really special to me. There's also the Bugatti circuit in F4 that I love because it's where I started out learning in F4. So there's always going to be some special memories there.
Nice. Well, that's the last one on the calendar this year, right? So you got a couple of things to look forward to. But there's quite some time between races. How do you is that convenient for you or not? Because I can imagine that you also, I mean, it's difficult to stay in the rhythm. You guys have 6 weekends this year, and there's quite a bit of time in between it. I mean, the last race that you did was at the end of June, and the first one is going to be in August. How do you keep your, what do you do in the weekends that you're not racing, or do you have other hobbies, or what are the things that you keep yourself busy with?
I mostly just train physically. It was a big jump from karting to single seater when it comes to being in physical shape, so I just spend my time working out and trying to be as physically fit as possible. And also I go to a school that was created by the French Federation for race car drivers. So right now I'm on holiday, but usually in between races I'm at school and I'm still in that sort of atmosphere of racing, because I'm the people that go to school with me are also in the same championship as me, and we do a lot of physical training, a lot of specialized training for race car driving. So I'm always sort of in that atmosphere.
So there's essentially a lot of support and what seems like a really strong community where you, in terms of helping expand and give you the ability to grow as a driver.
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, we're 8 people at the school so far because it's optional and it's far away from home. So not a lot of people go, but it's really wonderful because the French Federation is an academy, and they really took that into account. And it's difficult juggling having an education and doing a sport at a high level. So they really help us with that, and I've been able to maintain good grades all year long. So I'm really happy about that. And it also it's good to be close with the people you drive with. Despite the competition and everything, it's good to have people understand what it's like to drive at a high level, because I remember being in a regular school and I would just never come to school because I'd always be traveling around France and I live in Switzerland. Right. So and I would come back at 1 a.m. from a race in Normandy, and then I would have to go to school the next day with 6 hours of sleep. And yeah, it was pretty difficult for me. So I'm happy to be in the school that I am now.
I mean, it seems like there also involves for yourself personally a level of discipline. What would you say helps fuel that? No pun intended.
Well, I think it's for us, we don't see it as a sacrifice or discipline, because we just see working out and having this lifestyle as something that's gonna get us back on track. So for us, we don't really need to motivate ourselves, because it's just part of what you have to do.
Speaking of motivation, since we've highlighted a bit, I have a question related to drivers, past or present. Is there any specific drivers that stand out in motorsport that are inspirations for you?
So on the current F1 grid, it would be Max Verstappen, because he's the reason I started watching Formula One. My brother was a fan at the time, so I was just cheer for him because I didn't know anyone else. But that's what started my passion for Formula One. And in a way, that's what led me to becoming a race car driver. So I'll always support Max Verstappen. And then of all time, I think Ayrton Senna is the biggest inspiration for me.
Yeah, it's hard not to add him into a conversation for sure. What advice would you give to other young girls who dream of competing in motorsport?
Well, this goes out to girls and boys equally. It's never too late. I remember when I was 10, I thought it was too late, and then I ended up starting at 13. And when you love something, if you really give it your all, there's no guarantee that you could be the greatest of all time, but there is a guarantee that you can be very, very good. And so you just have to push yourself, push past your fears. And there's not always going to be someone to tell you to keep going. It's going to push you to be better, to try new things. Sometimes it really has to come from you. And that's the attitude that you want to have if you want to pursue your dreams.
I completely agree.
I think that's some great advice. Yeah, yeah, for sure. And one thing I was wondering, so I suppose that this year up until this point is probably in racing the most competitive level that you've been at so far. What is something that you think you have improved on most during this year, if you look back at the first half of this season? Like what has been the biggest challenge, or where have you improved the most?
I think in terms of really feeling the car, I feel it on track, and especially on the sim, I'm starting to get a better sensation of when I get just a bit of oversteer or understeer, and really being able to differentiate between different setups. I think that was something that I struggled with already in karting, and it's something that I've really been managed to work on in Formula 4. And I think it's going to be very helpful for me later on.
Well, I must say, Eloise, it's really great to talk to you about the things involving being inspired. I mean, it truly, your passion speaks through the way that you communicate about your career in motorsport currently, and for anyone, it's really, really like the passion is such an important vital part, and you can clearly hear it in the way that you describe it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I can only agree with that. I think it would be cool to talk a little bit about the Formula One weekend, and I think talking about the Sunday, it would be good to get into qualifying first. Eloise, you already mentioned that you're a bit of a Verstappen fan, so
what
do you think about that pole lap from Verstappen on the Saturday? Did you expect that?
Well, I'm very happy that he's on pole position, obviously. And I think that they had an interesting setup on the rear wing, so that it allowed him to get a lot of speed in sector one and two, but it would be a little more tricky in sector three. So it was all about him compensating in sector three by really trying not to lose time. And I think he did that very well. And the timing was perfect. And I'm just really glad that Max Verstappen's on pole position, obviously. I wasn't expecting it because in free practice, I saw that the McLarens and the Ferraris were really strong. But I mean, I'm not going to complain. I'm very happy.
I think it's a good point. I think, especially in the Ferraris, I was surprised by that. And I think a lot of people actually making their predictions, looking at FP1 and FP2, were sitting on the Ferrari hype train, and it was interesting to see because Verstappen set his pole lap quite late. Actually, I think he was the very last person to set a time, and you're right, his setup was very interesting with that rear wing. I thought it was interesting given that we were also somewhat expecting, Sam already mentioned it, but it rained on the Sunday, and of course, with rain taken into account, maybe that setup would make it slightly harder on the Sunday. But it was an amazing lap, and it was a very competitive session to begin with. I think it was interesting to see some of the other drivers that made it into FP3 as well. Into Q3 as well. Especially Pierre Gasly, because I mean, in the end, with the Alpine being the last team in the Constructor Championship, you wouldn't expect him to be as often in Q3 as he is. Also, Oliver Behrmann, already knowing that he would get that penalty for crashing in a practice session under the red flag, which was very unfortunate, but a very, very competitive qualifying session for him. And we also knew that Kimi Antonelli would get a penalty because of the crash that he had with Verstappen in the race in Austria. But Samantha, any other thing that you want to take away from qualifying that you felt needed highlighting?
Well, I think that, and I only highlight it because of his performance during the race, I think that seeing Nico finish in 19th, that then led to where we saw him in the race was somewhere where you wouldn't have going into the race. I would have looked at that and thought, okay, you know, he's going to get a result that's probably going to be outside of the points. But ultimately, I think, you know, you touched on that, Anton, the surprise is definitely with Ollie Bearman. I think what's interesting is we're seeing a lot of strength coming out of the midfield. It's become the depth for competition there has really increased, and Haas is one of those that you can start to talk about a little bit more, obviously Sauber as well. So I think all in all, those were pleasant surprises. But I do, you know, basically exactly what you said. I mean, the actual margin for timings there, it was so close. It was very, very close. But I think overall a pleasant surprise to see Max securing pole.
Yeah, what's actually interesting is that, talking about that midfield, is that things are starting to change a little bit to some aspects. You mentioned there Sauber. I mean, of course, and we are going to talk about Hülkenberg on the Sunday, but this is already the fourth time in a row that he is scoring points. At the same time, Williams, who we thought was clearly the team ahead in the subtop in the first part of the season, now seem to be struggling a little bit. Of course, struggling in Austria, but again, not making it into Q3 on this weekend. So yes, there do seem to be some things that that are changing during the season. But I mean, now talking about Sauber, let's just get into it, because
let's
think
get into it.
It needs talking about. And I'm going to ask you, Eloise, what did you make of that race from Hülkenberg? Of course, like I said last week already, because last week he even started at P20, I think, and scoring a P9. But what did you make of the race of Nico Hülkenberg this weekend?
Well, first of all, I'm so glad that he finally got a podium after his 239th race start, because he had the record for the most races without a podium, but I think that's not a record anyone wants to have. So I'm just glad that he finally got that. And I mean, going from 19th to third position is incredible. And I think that Sauber executed the strategy perfectly. It was really flawless, and in those changing conditions, that really made a difference. But of course, Hülkenberg had the pace, managed to fend off Hamilton, and he knew what to do in that situation to go get that podium. So I think that it was just great strategy and great execution coming from the team and the driver, and just everything clicked.
Yeah, it did look for a while that Hamilton was going to overtake him, but I think after they went on the slick tires, it was never really it was still nail biting watching it, but I think the gap was always between 7 and 5 seconds. So in the end, he secured it. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the weather conditions as well, because it was very interesting to see that first part of the race where different teams went for different strategies. And of course, everybody who started on the Inters and then went to slick tires there just even before before the start, and it seemed to be a bit of a gamble that was interesting to watch. I don't think any of those that did actually made it work, but the only one that actually did seem to call the strategies right at the beginning was Stroll, who actually swapped a little bit later for slick tires. I think he went in the sixth lap and then went on softs for a bit, got all the way back up. Even past Tsunoda, of course, he started behind Tsunoda, and then everybody went into the pits to change their Inters for fresh Inters. Stroll also went into the pits and got onto Inters, and then found himself easily in the top the top five, even also battling. It seemed for a while that actually it was going to be a battle between Stroll and Hülkenberg for the podium. Sam, as a Canadian, yeah. how did you look at that?
Look, I mean, I think that we've seen some success recently with Aston Martin as a whole, with both Alonso and Stroll's performance. And yeah, I completely agree. I think that the tire strategy and the timing of that played a huge part in where he ended up. Like, his overall finish was seventh. And I mean, for Stroll and for Aston Martin, I think that they could chalk that up to be a fairly good result for them after this weekend. I don't think they're in a position yet to be extremely competitive, but it is interesting looking ahead even into next year, and with Newey now on board, who I'm sure will make a considerable impact in the overall car itself, where it's going to lead going into next year. And I mean, strategy wise, I think that they really played it well. Interestingly enough, I mean, when it comes to weather, we see it time and time again, the tire strategy becomes paramount, and the timing of it. And in this case, then you have the multiple safety cars that happened as well. So I really, as much as there is chaos when weather is like this, it really, really adds a lot of emphasis onto the importance of the strategical side. And I love that part of Formula One so much. So I think there are some teams that got it right. Clearly with Stroll and Aston Martin, they did. And of course, there are some that maybe had a little bit more difficulty with that. I would say that, you know, we obviously saw in the very beginning, during the formation lap, several drivers go in and immediately switch to slicks, anticipating that there was going to be drying conditions. And then we saw the absolute downpour shortly after that. And we saw some drivers such as Max struggle on Inters for a considerable period of time. So I really thought it was quite fascinating to see how things played out, because ultimately, with Stroll being at one point battling, like you said, with Nico, I mean, the order on the grid itself kept changing. And these elements that I just mentioned played such a huge role in that.
And you actually, you mentioned safety cars there. I think we had two virtual safety cars. We had two full safety cars. And I think that brings us to one of the other elephants in the room that we need to talk about is what happened under that second safety car with the penalty that Piastri got for braking. Eloise, what did you make of that?
So I... Speaking from experience, under safety car, when someone brakes really hard in front of you, it's your first instinct, obviously, is to dodge them. And then sometimes you end up right next to them, and in the case of Max Verstappen, in front of them. And you can't really tell from seeing on the screen, but when you're really in the car, under safety car, someone braking it at a moment that you wouldn't expect and really hard, it can really take you by surprise. But I will say that Piastri knew how to destabilize Verstappen by doing that. I think that if he had braked a little less hard, it would have been a good way to sort of anger, in a way, Verstappen, so that later on he would make a mistake like he did and unfortunately spin when the safety car got launched again. I think that obviously he did get a penalty, so it didn't work out. But had he been a little more cautious in his braking, but still managed to destabilize Verstappen like he did, it would have been a very smart move from him, considering the mistakes that Verstappen did right after.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point.
I think one thing that was different, if we compare this to what Russell did actually under the safety car in Canada, where he was also braking and Verstappen passed him, I thought that situation was quite similar. The only difference, of course, in Canada it didn't rain, and here it did rain, so perhaps that added a little bit to the danger of the move. But personally, I did feel that 10 seconds was quite harsh. I think, you know, would it have been 5 seconds, I would have been better able to understand the penalty. I do understand it from some perspective, but I also definitely understand Oscar Piastri's I don't know what emotions you want to attribute to the emotions that he had after the race, being interviewed on the podium. But he was quite clearly pissed off, and I do completely understand.
Well, he did ask McLaren to let Norris to ask Norris to let him by so that they could actually fight for first position, if they really believed that he didn't deserve the penalty, which is very bold coming from him.
I was going to say that probably never was going to happen, also given that it wasn't Norris' fault that the penalty, in the end, it was an incident between Piastri and Verstappen, so they weren't going to give that place up that easily. But thinking that actually, if it would have been only 5 seconds, we would have had still a pretty decent race, because I think that the gap between Norris and Piastri for the later stage of the race was somewhere between 5 seconds. I think in the end, he finished 6 seconds behind him, but of course, he served that penalty in the pits. So if it would have been only 5 seconds, we would have seen a very, very interesting McLaren race up front. But in the end, it wasn't to be to that extent. But of course, a beautiful home win for Lando Norris. I think we can all agree on that. No?
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I think that Norris's pace was a little stronger either way towards the end of the race. So I think that he would have ended up winning either way.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic to see him win the home race. I was happy about it because I chose him as the race winner this weekend for predictions. So that was great for me. But ultimately,
both of you actually.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Louise, you chose him as well. Yeah. See, so we were both happy.
Yeah.
We
and
were,
I didn't, unfortunately.
Oh, did you? I put him around as well. Funny enough.
No, and yeah, both of you did.
Yeah. See, look at us. Great minds think alike. but I think that Norris, look, at the end of the day, I think it was a fantastic drive on his end as well. I mean, even there were some really bold moments that he put out there. There was at one point when the rain was really coming down and he was trying to overtake Max. That was a very bold move. But I think that the strategy worked well for him. I think that ultimately his head was in the game, it seemed, and it really translated into the result. So overall, he deserved to win. At the end of the day, I do agree with you, Anton. I think that the 10-second penalty for Piastri was definitely harsh. Although I understand giving the penalty out and the braking that he did do under the safety car, I do think that, you know, 10 seconds, when you give something like that, that dramatically changes the result at times for a driver, and in Piastri's case it did. However, to Norris's benefit, and I mean, at the end of the day, McLaren is the strongest team currently on the grid, likely throughout the remainder of this season. I mean, they are a fantastic pair in itself, And I mean, if you go back and look at the previous race, what was really fantastic about them racing together is that they were able to give each other enough space. They really are competing, but at the same time in a respectful way, it seems. And I want to knock on wood to not jinx myself as I say that, because we've seen historically sometimes that doesn't translate with teammates. But ultimately, I think it's really exciting to see this pairing between Piastri and Norris, because they're incredibly talented. They have the pace in the car, I enjoy seeing wheel to wheel action between two drivers, two teammates. Although maybe McLaren may be biting their nails at times when they see it happen, it's as a fan to watch it, it's really enjoyable.
So actually, if we make up the balance, we see that after Canada, the gap between the two was looked a little bit larger. Then Norris, by winning in Austria, reduced it with 7 points, and now is again reducing it with 7 points. So there's only 8 points between them. Eloise, how do you see the remainder of the season going between the two of them? Who would you say has the better papers for winning the World Championship?
Gosh, I honestly couldn't tell, because they're both fantastic drivers and they're obviously showing us a rivalry that we want to see, because they're not erratic in their driving when it comes to competing against one another. They're pretty clean, and there was an incident a couple of races earlier, but obviously Lando apologized on the radio and said that it was his fault. So it's good to see that kind of sportsmanship. But I think it's going to be very interesting to see what comes out of this rivalry. But I honestly couldn't tell, because they're both young, talented drivers. Obviously, Norris has a little more racing experience than Piastri, but we've seen that Piastri is doing, he's smart with his driving, he's skilled, and they've both got the pace. So we'll just see how it goes. I couldn't really predict.
Well, I guess that's also the nice thing about it. I mean, if it were easy to predict, it would be a lot more boring. So I think it's a very good thing that you can't tell. And to be honest, I also can't. And I think that's one of the reasons why there's still a lot to look forward to for the remainder of the season.
Absolutely. Okay, so it's about that time that we get into scores. So Anton, let's start off with how many people played this weekend.
Yes, Sam. Well, we had 1,417 people making predictions this weekend. And I'm going to ask you, how many people do you think correctly predicted this podium with a Norris win, Piastri on P2 and Hülkenberg on that? Yeah, I got to ask you the question. I mean,
you
I ask
you
every
to.
Weekend, so I'm going to ask you now too.
And you know, the funny thing is that I, you know, watching the race and seeing what, once the checkered flag went, the first thought was this question. I was like, I bet you it was nobody. So I'm going to stick to that. I don't think anybody would have predicted Nico in third. And if somebody did, hats off to you.
No, you're right. Nobody had this podium in their predictions, so we can get that away with. I will give you the average score, which was 42.3, which I personally felt is relatively on the high side, given how many finishes we had. I mean, in Austria, we had an average score of 38.1, so it's a higher average score with a pretty chaotic race, if you ask me. But we'll get to the reason of that. So let's first have a look at the podium of this weekend, and we actually have we have three people that share the P2 spot. So there were three people that scored 70 points, and those were Nicolò Lemme, actually playing for the first very time, so playing Forecast for the first time and getting on the podium straight away. We also had Joaquin Balaguer from Spain scoring 70 points. We had Dani Rojas from Colombia scoring 70 points. So those three have to do together with that second step of the podium. And the winner only scored one additional point, and that was actually longtime Forecast player Ryan Donaldson. And the nice thing is, he's actually from the UK, so we have a British winner for the British Grand Prix.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that is very nice. Means we're going to end the podcast with God Save the King. And I think that's very fitting. Sam, I am going to ask you as I always do, from which countries do you think that we have the most players this weekend? I want to hear a top three.
I don't think there's going to be much a change from last week. So I am going to go with, hopefully in order, Kenya, Spain, and Mexico.
Yeah, well, the first two are correct, but the third spot this weekend is for the Dominican Republic, so for Mexico. And actually, Mexico was only fifth, I think, after Argentina on fourth. So a little bit of a change there. We also had a player from a new country. It was the first time we ever had somebody from Madagascar play. And if we look at the most positions gained for a country, it was Bahrain, moving up six places to P107, which moves us to the overall championship. And I'm going to have a look at who was on P3 after Austria. That was Anthony Al-Chadrawi from Lebanon. He scored 45.5 points this weekend, which is actually pretty decent, but it does mean he drops to P5. Meaning we have a new P3, and that's Matt McCassie from New Zealand, scoring 68 points. He actually finished on P8. He's actually coming in from P9. He was on P9 after Austria. I'm just saying that now he finished on P8. Do you know, actually, we had a couple of people finishing together on P5. Actually, Savannah, who's usually on our podcast as well, has finished on P5 together with Shane from Bemden, who's also been on our podcast previously. So we had a lot
fantastic.
Of we had a lot of ex-guests performing very well, a lot better than I did, but we'll get to that. Our P2 after Austria was Jack Woods from Canada. He scored only 44 points, drops to P6, means we have a new P2. And now, currently in the championship, we have a 1-2 from Italy, because we know our P1 is from Italy. Our P2 now is also from Italy. That's Paolo Ginamo, scoring 62 points, coming from P4, moving up to P2. And Filippo Morelli scored 44.5, and that means he's still in P1, but actually his lead of 20.4 points is now only a gap of 7 points, so it is shrinking.
Wow. Well, I was going to say as well, for New Zealand, that's the first time someone from New Zealand's been on the podium.
That's the first time that somebody from New Zealand is in the overall championship in the first three spots. You are right. We had somebody from New Zealand win one of the weekends, actually, but that's a few years back already. I wouldn't rely on either one of our memories to
I was
say
just gonna say,
was,
but the fact that you could remember that is fantastic, because you know I never would. So that's
I will look it up in the meantime. But while I'm looking that up, I'm going to ask you, what was your prediction for this weekend? You already mentioned you had Norris on P1, but what did the rest of your prediction look like?
For myself, I went with Norris, obviously, race win. In second was Piastri, and my third was Hamilton.
Right, so that means that you scored. Did you see how many points you scored or not?
I did not. I usually like to go in blind, so I'm excited to know.
Well, you did very well, actually. You scored a total of 60 points, and that means you are on P113 for this weekend.
Not too shabby. Okay, I will take that.
In the meantime, I am still looking for that New Zealand win. but I can't seem to find it. Anyway, I might have to come back on that on the next podcast. But in the overall championship, do you recall where you were after the race in Austria?
I know I had dropped significantly. I believe I was in the 300s.
Yeah, you dropped to 207, and you're now actually back in the top 200. You're at 162, so actually you moved up quite a lot of places. So that's very good. Heloise, so you predicted. Do you remember what your podium prediction was? We already said that you had Norris on P1.
I had Norris on P1, Hamilton on P2, and Piastri on P3.
That's right. You ended up scoring 44 points. And you,
oh.
Well, it's a bit fewer than Sam, but still a lot more than I did. So you still did really quite well. We actually had a good number of F4 drivers who made their predictions this week. And it's actually there was 19 F4 drivers, and you ranked 10th amongst all of them. So pretty much in the midway pack. And actually there was a French driver, but I think he's driving, Andrea Dupe, he's driving in F4 Italy, if I'm not mistaken. He's the one that that won it out of the F4 driver, so congratulations to him. And I would have liked to skip my score, but all right, let's talk about
let's
that
get
as well.
Into
it. I went with the podium of Piastri, Norris, Verstappen, scored only 30 points. I ended up P1107. Oof. And that means in the championship I'm dropping from P446 to P522, so I'm not even in the top 500.
Is it safe to start saying there's always next year?
I think but I can adjust my goals for this year, that's for certain.
Well, that's
although
true.
Hopefully I'll still move up a couple of places. Yes. Well, I mean, that means that we actually, I think that there's nothing else left than to do the quiz. And so for those not always listening, let me explain a little bit. We are going to pass all the first 10 finishing positions of this Grand Prix. And Sam and Eloise are going to guess how many people, and as I mentioned, we had 1,417 people that played the game. How many people correctly predicted each finishing position? So I'm going to start with you, Sam. How many out of those 1,417 people do you think put Norris on their P1 for this weekend?
I think there was quite a few. There was definitely two, two of us here right now. So I am going to go with 789.
I'll go with 862.
Well, actually, the answer is somewhat in the middle, but Sam, you're just slightly closer. The right answer is 824, so you're only 35 away from the right answer. And yeah, so that's unfortunately closer than the 38 away that you went over, Eloise. So the first point is for Sam. And that means, Eloise, you can guess how many people do you think predicted Piastri to finish second?
I'd say around 674.
That's a good guess. I'm going to go a little lower, and I'm going to say 635.
All right, Sam, you're just slightly closer. It was 513 people, but both guesses are pretty good. But that means it's a second point for you, and that means that you can guess how many people had Hülkenberg on P3.
Oh, I am going to...
Zero?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. Trust me, because that's what I was going with. I am going to definitely stick to zero.
So both of you are going to go with zero?
Think so,
yeah.
All right, well, I'm gonna surprise you. There was actually one person who got Hülkenberg on P3.
Well, we definitely need to give a shout out to that person.
And Sam, actually, if your memory was a little bit better, I have been telling you that there's a guy from Indonesia who has been consistently putting Hülkenberg on P3 for the past 2 years, simply because he's just waiting for the moment for it to happen. And I have actually mentioned that, I think, twice on the podcast, and we've laughed about it. But today was his day. So, Kevin Darapai, I salute you, because I don't think anybody was expecting anybody to get that Hülkenberg P3 correct.
Wow. Well, it's nice to know that it's finally paid off for him. And probably, so what did he do overall in points?
That's a good question. I gotta have to look that up. But if I'm not mistaken, he went with Hamilton, Russell, Hülkenberg podium. So wasn't a great point scoring podium, other than getting the 15 points for Hülkenberg, right? But let me have a look in the app right now as we're speaking. And so he had Hamilton, Russell, Hülkenberg. He went with Norris on P4. He scored 1.5 points for Stroll. All in all, 21.1 points. So not a whole lot, but still, I think we should applaud that Hülkenberg P3.
Absolutely.
So that means I'm not going to give a point for either one or half a point for both, whichever way you want. But we're going to go to Hamilton. Eloise, how many people do you think had Hamilton on P4?
I'm going to say 421.
That's a good guess, too. I think I'm going to go... Oh, I don't know, because I feel like that's actually pretty good. I want to go lower, but I do also think that we know Hamilton does historically so well on this track. So I am gonna go lower. I am gonna say 350.
Well, to be really honest with you, I think my answer would also have been somewhere around that, but it's surprisingly low, the number. It's only 181 people, so that does mean Sam scores another point, but I was surprised myself with the low number.
Wow, I'm a little surprised by that.
Really low. I think everyone expected him to do podium.
Yeah.
Because he's always, it's been 10 years that he's only been on the podium in Silverstone. So.
Yes, that's very true.
That's a very good point. Actually, in the meantime, that made me come up with a bonus question, which is going to be how many people you think predicted Hamilton for the win. But we'll get to the bonus question at the very end. Let's first go to Verstappen. Sam, how many people put Verstappen on that P5?
Well, I know two did, but let's say I'm going to say 74.
I'm going to go a little higher. I think I'm going to go with 145.
Okay, well, I think my guess would have been somewhere around that as well. But again, I'm very surprised by the actual high number that we're getting here. So there were 467 people that had Verstappen on P5.
Oh my goodness.
That does actually mean, Eloise, that you are closer to the right answer. So there's your first point, and it's 3-1.
Finally.
and I'm going to ask you how many people you think had Gasly on P6, which we didn't even really mention too much talking about the race. I feel like it was so chaotic that we also forgot to talk about some of it. I mentioned his good qualifying performance, but I think, getting that P6 for Alpine is a very great accomplishment for him for this week. But how many people do you think had him in P6 in their predictions?
I think very few. I'm gonna go with 27.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna go low as well. I'm gonna go a little lower, and I'm gonna say 12.
Well, it's interesting to think about that there was more people that predicted the P3 Hülkenberg than a P6 for Gasly, because there was nobody in the entire game that had Gasly on P6.
Wow.
Yeah, so surprises all along.
Because I had him on P8.
I
had him on P8, so I expected someone would have put P6.
Yeah.
I didn't even have him in my prediction.
I think it also is interesting because, like you said, Anton, we didn't touch too much on Gasly, but I think recently and in general, yeah, he's been, I mean, with the ups and downs and a lot of downs that are going on right now with Alpine and the struggle with the car as a whole, I mean, he has really been extracting the most out of it and putting on quite a performance. I think that a lot of it has to do with obviously what he has been able to take out of the car, and this weekend was no different. So I'm surprised though that nobody chose him.
Right. Well, at least Eloise still got 2 points for that, because the P6 finish for Gasly means he scores 8 points, and being 2 spots away means you're still scoring 25% of those points. So you got 2 points for Gasly. That's more than I did. Actually, I'm looking at your prediction now. You also, you had Hülkenberg in your top 10. Just, you had him on P10.
Yeah, I had him on P10.
But that was still, it was still a good shout, I think. So that was Gasly. Means we go to Stroll. And how fitting, Samantha, you're the one to kick this one off.
I don't think a lot of people would have thought he would be there. So I'm going to go with 3.
I'm going to go with 1.
Well, you'll be surprised about this one then as well, because there was actually a few more people. There was 14 people that had Stroll on P7. I guess
no way.
Maybe some people thought that it was going to rain, and Stroll does well in the rain generally.
Yes, that is true. That is a fair point.
So, but still, for me as well, surprising that that many people. I mean, I understand putting Stroll in your top 10, but putting him all the way up in P7 is it feels, yeah. But anyway, it's where he finished. So means we go to Albon on P8.
I'm gonna go with 6 people.
Okay, I am gonna go with 24.
Actually, this one was quite high. It was 169 people that had Albon on P8.
Oh,
that's a pretty high number.
It is indeed.
Yeah, it is.
And but of course, you know, the Williams have been scoring points pretty consistently for most of the seasons. Although, like I said, they do start to struggle a little bit. I think James Vowles even said ahead of the race that he would be happy if both of the cars would finish, which they did. So in that sense, a successful day for Williams. But we move to P9, Alonso, Sam.
I'm gonna go with a fair amount. I'm gonna say, well, I guess what would you define fair amount? But in my mind, it would be so. I'm gonna say 67.
I'm gonna go with 59.
And actually, again, quite a lot of people with Alonso at P9, 189 people. So that means. That means there's another point for Sam. The score now says 7 against 1. Well, or 7.5 against 1.5. If we both give you half a point for getting Hülkenberg, well, having the same answer. Well, you can still win 1 point, Eloise. I'm going to ask you, Russell on P10.
I'd say 87.
Okay, I am going to say 55.
Well, I guess that most people who had Russell in their prediction had him up a little bit higher than P10. So it was only 6 people, actually, that had him as low as P10. So that means it's another point for Sam. But I will give you a chance at least get the bonus question right, because in the meantime, I like I said, I did make a bonus question, which is going to be, how many people actually do you think after, you know, we saw Hamilton do very well in the first 2 practice sessions. Of course, these 2 sessions you can watch before the deadline of making your forecast prediction. So how many people do you think put Hamilton on P1 in their prediction this weekend? I'm going to ask both of you.
Okay, so then I'm going to go with 612.
Ooh, okay. I am going to go with a little lower. I'm going to say 401.
All right. Well, it wasn't that high. It was 222 people, which I still felt that was quite a lot.
That's still quite a few. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm going to compare it to the previous race in Austria. So how many people do you think had Hamilton in their on their P1 for the race in Austria?
Oh, I'm going to say 20.
It was only 3 people. So it means that actually people seem to actually do take into account practice sessions quite a bit, or they just felt that Silverstone is Hamilton's track. So we go from 3 people in Austria to 222 this weekend. So quite a lot.
That is. A lot of people have faith in Hamilton and at Silverstone.
So to end off this podcast, what I would like to ask is, of course, we have 2 race weekends. Well, sorry, we have 2 weekends without any Formula One race. And after that, we're going to go to Spa. And as we already touched upon, you've recently driven in Spa, Eloise. So I'd like to hear from you what you are looking forward to see in the F1 weekend. And do you look at it now in a different way, having driven there?
Yeah, I think that I'm definitely going to look at it from a different perspective, having driven on there. But I think it's just going to be really magic for me to see Formula One drivers drive on the track that I was just on. I know that they've already driven there before, but I think it's going to be even more special for me this time.
Well, look, Spa is one of my favorite tracks as a fan to watch. I absolutely love it. So I am very much looking forward to it. We have a 2-week break, like you said. So a break for the drivers as well, since clearly there's been a lot going on. So I think it's going to be exciting. It always is exciting at Spa, and it's a historic track that holds so much weight. So really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, plus of course there's always a chance for weather playing into cards there as well. So that's something that can shuffle the pack again. I think we can conclude that we had a very exciting Silverstone race. Actually, it's been 2 in a row where we had a lot of mixed conditions, and actually twice in a row also with a British winner. So yeah, I think there's definitely a lot to look forward to at Spa, as we already talked about. I think the championship battle between Norris and Piastri is going to be one to look forward to race after race. And I think what I just hope for is that both McLarens keep finishing and keep close to one another, so that we have the remaining of the whole season to look forward to, and that hopefully it gets decided on the very last race of the season. But that's still far ahead of us. Eloise, I thank you for coming on the podcast. It was very exciting to talk to you, and it was very nice to hear your perspective on racing and hear how you got into motorsports and how you going through your F4 season, and I wish you the best of luck with that as well. You sure have 2 new fans that are going to follow you through the rest of this season, but the rest of your career. So thank you very much for coming on. It was very, very nice to talk to you.
Thank you for having me. Well, thank you very much.
It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on, and really, really great to hear your thoughts as well overall when it comes to tracks, when it comes to passion, and when it comes to Formula One. It's been awesome.
Thank you.